Well, welcome again. For those who weren't here last week, which is probably quite a few people, speaking for two Sundays in a row on mental health and well-being, and where I can, from a Christian perspective, no, let me clarify that, from a Christian perspective, it doesn't mean that everything's going to be quoted from the Bible, because the Bible is not a medical textbook. The other thing is, and I said this last week, I am not a doctor. So that's the first thing. My brother is, but I'm not. And the second thing is, we're dealing here with really complex issues and with very, very complex creatures, and that's us human beings. And something I forgot to say last week, wish I had, but I'll say it now, something I've been reading and hearing more and more about, which absolutely blows me away, just shows how complex we are, is the research that's currently going into gut health and how the health of your gut has an effect on the health of your brain. Now, that is crazy. That what happens here affects there is just incredible. And they're only just starting to really explore it at the moment. And the fact that every one of us has a different, I think they call it a biome, or like a gut biome, and what we have there. And it affects our mental health and well-being, which just really shows how complex we are as human beings. And so I'll just really, really quickly cover what I'll go over what I covered last week. So I emphasise that, in my opinion, mental health is two main spheres. One sphere is to do with mental illness, so actual sickness, whether that be anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, OCD, so forth. The second one, no less important, but I just think there's two ways to look at it, is our outlook, our attitude, our systems of thinking, our habits of thought, which I think is another way of looking at mental health. So the two main areas, illness, and I think I summarised it by saying glass half empty, glass half full. Excuse me. I then also looked at a couple of, or some myths, or I believe are myths concerning mental health. One is, particularly from a church perspective or Christian perspective, mental health is not always demonic, okay? So if you're hearing Christian leaders anywhere saying that if people are suffering from mental health problems, it's demonic, and it's definitely demonic, and it just ends up being demonic, no. Is some of it? Yes. Is most of it? No. Second thing, the whole idea that psychology is not for Christians. Now, there is some stuff in psychology that is really wacko, okay? And there is some stuff in psychology that I wouldn't touch. And the whole stuff that's coming out at the moment about gender fluidity, I think has huge negative implications for our society. But psychology does have good things, okay? And I know of Christian people who have said, if you are a Christian, you should not go to a psychologist. No, you need to go to a psychologist who is appropriate and is suitable. The other one, which is not really from a Christian perspective, the whole thing of just snap out of it. Oh, you'll be all right. Toughen up. No, for many people that won't happen. Although for some people I think it does need to happen, but for some people, no. And the other myth I quickly addressed was the whole myth of, oh, well, it's not a physical disorder. Your kidneys aren't dying. Your lungs aren't dying. You'll be all right. No, it's just as important, or if not more important, because it's internal. Okay, and then I said I was going to look at from, I was going to cover a number of points, and I only got to the first one, and then we stopped. I think I might have talked about the intermission break. Yes, I think I did. Didn't bring the chocolate biscuits though, sorry Sue. And so the one point I did get up to was, whether we like it or not, There are Christians who get cancer, and there are Christians who get severe depression. There's not really much more I can add to that. That's just life. There are Christians who die from cancer, and there are Christians who suffer clinical depression. Okay, so I'm going to move on. So pretend you've had your chocolate biscuit back after intermission. Those who don't know the story, I can tell it to you later on. Okay, the next one is, and I think everyone's really aware of this, but I still think it throws us onto our backside sometime, and that is life. I can promise you this, unfortunately. Life will throw up curveballs and bad things at some stage. Now, I don't care what age you are, and if the kids were in here, they'd be hearing the same thing. I don't care whether you're 9 or 90, life will throw up bad stuff. Whether that be illness, loss of a family member, breakup of a relationship, career problems, financial problems, addictions. Things will come up that you could never have guessed would come up, and they will throw you onto the back of your pants. Okay? So my wife and I have three children, and our eldest daughter, Rachel, was probably the most easygoing, gentle, healthy young girl you could imagine. And at 16, mental health hit her severely. Severely. And you can imagine what that did for Belinda and I. And it's been quite a long road since then, but with lots of really good victory, which is fantastic. But that absolutely threw us, and we had no idea. None. Just threw us. So, I'm sure you all know, but if they haven't come, unfortunately they will come. And when they do, it's not that easy just to skip through them, la-di-da through the tulips. There are going to be times of despair and darkness and anxiety. You are going to go through the valley, just like just about everyone in the Bible went through. They went through the valley at some stage. And while I'm on that topic, parents, and I'm going to speak as an educator here as well, this whole thing of helicopter parenting, and there's also another one called the lawnmower parent. This relates to what I'm saying here. Your kids, as they grow, will face difficulties. Okay? For example, if they make it to uni, there is a good chance they may fail a unit. Or they may struggle to live on noodles. Okay? Like, it's going to happen. And the one thing they don't need is either a parent who's a helicopter following them everywhere they go, trying to protect them, or is a lawnmower trying to smooth the way in front of them so they don't get any obstacles or hurdles. That's the last thing they need, because you will not be able to do that for them for the rest of their life. Okay? And my son, he works at Murdoch University in student services, and he said, he's a pretty bright boy, he said that one of the big trends he's seeing is that when kids are having trouble at uni, this is 21, 22, 23, 24, 25-year-olds, it's mum who comes up to the uni and puts her finger down on the desk and says, "What are you doing?" Okay? Now, that's not good for mental health and well-being. Full stop. Okay, my next one, choices. Now, whether we like it or not, so much of what we do is choices. And when it comes to mental health, there are a lot of things that you and I can do to affect our mental health. What are we watching on TV or on YouTube, the internet, movies? What are we listening to? Whether that be music or teaching podcast, whatever it might be. And in no way am I saying here, oh, we shouldn't be watching or listening to non-Christian stuff. No, I am not saying that whatsoever. Okay, what I'm saying is we need to be very wise and careful in what we watch and listen to. Okay, now, you've probably met people, as I have, who have made a decision not to watch the nightly news. So I've got some parents at school who have made that decision. They have said, we do not watch the nightly news because it just makes us feel down. And with kids, it's not good for us, and so we don't do it. Okay, that's good. That's a decision. They've made that decision for their mental outlook and health and well-being. But there's also things of choice such as what are we eating? What are we drinking? What are we putting into our bodies? What are we doing with our bodies? All of that. Remember what I said at the beginning, how complex we are as human beings? We're really, really complex. And what you do to your body, think about the gut health, what you do to your body affects what happens here. So when we look at things like alcohol. Now, I don't drink. And when people ask me why I don't drink, I never, ever say it's because I'm a Christian. Because that's not why I don't drink. I don't drink because I never grew up with it, so I don't like the taste. It does nothing for me. That's it. I've got nothing against Christians drinking, but be careful. It's a drug, and it affects you emotionally and mentally. How much are you drinking? How often are you drinking? Are there other substances that are going into your body that shouldn't be going in? Misuse of medical supplies, of drugs and so forth. Exercise, getting outside, walking, swimming, whatever it be. All of those things are really important. And I could be saying this to any audience, not just a church audience, any audience. All right, something else to keep in mind, whether we like it or not, and I think Sue will really appreciate this one, I hope so, is we all have different temperaments. Okay. The way I like to think of it is this. This is how I try and clarify in my mind. Every single one of us was conceived or born with a certain temperament. As we've grown in our early years, we develop our personality. And then as we continue to grow, we develop our character. Now, character is what I think we should be judged on. Like, he is an honest person. She is a reliable person. Like, our character. But we all have an innate temperament. Now, I'm not going to ask you to put your hand up, but I know there are some people in this room who are without a doubt glass half full. And there are some people in this room, without a doubt, are glass half empty. It's just your natural temperament. Some people are melancholic. Some people have a natural sort of, not urging, they have a natural path towards being more of the down. Some people are more what's called choleric or phlegmatic. Some people are more easygoing. Some people just look at the positive all the time. Okay? So just remember that all of us are different. We've all got different temperaments, okay? And just in a summary, some are half full, some are half empty. Now, that doesn't mean you can't change your thinking, but it does mean that your natural tendency will be certain directions. So just think about it for a second. Where do you think you are? Like, what sort of temperament are you? Do you tend to look for the positive? Are you a questioner? Are you more relaxed or are you uptight? Do you tend to look for the anxious or do you tend just to go, oh, well, that's just how it is? Okay, my next point, and I'm not going to use any Bible references yet for this one, but this is one that I really think as Christians we need to work on, And when Paul talks in Romans about the renewal of your mind, I think part of that relates to what I'm about to say. And that is, what are the patterns of thinking that you've developed over the years? For example, it must be my fault. Oh, I will never achieve. The worst will always happen. So have you and I developed patterns of thinking that have now become habits, and no matter what happens, we think those thoughts? Okay? Because if we have, and they're negative, and they're destructive, and they're causing mental poor health, then we should do something about them. And Paul does talk about, now I don't think this was totally the context he was talking in, but it was partly. He said, we can have our minds renewed. Renewed and renewed and renewed. Okay? So in particular, when you think of, you hear stories about child abuse survivors and their pattern of thinking as they get older and older continually is, it's my fault. It was my fault. It was my fault. When it wasn't their fault, it was the exact opposite. But they've developed this pattern of thinking of, it's my fault. So once again, just think to yourself. Do you think you've got patterns of thinking that are negative or destructive, that are really not what you think you need? And when you think about how Jesus would have thought, oh, that's not really how I should be thinking. The whole thing of insecurity. I wonder how many people in here struggle with that one. Oh, I wonder what people think. What do they think of me? What will they think of me if I make that decision? Patterns of thinking. Okay. I've read lots and lots of promos of health advertising and promotions in Australia, and books and pamphlets and leaflets, and I sit in the doctor's surgery and I pick them up and read them just out of interest. And here are some of the ones that I've read about dealing with mental health and well-being. Be thankful. Be grateful. Don't hold a grudge. You might see where I'm heading on this in a minute. Forgive. Focus on the needs of others. Have hope. Enjoy in moderation. Well, that's funny, because I reckon just about, in fact, all of those are biblical. Every single one of them. So just about every piece of advice that I read or hear in Australia through the media, whether it's on TV or in newspapers or leaflets or wherever it be, posters in the doctor's surgery, I look at them and go, really? That's been around for a long time. So it's something really important to remember. The Bible is not it's not a textbook. It's not a medical self-help guide. But the principles within it well and truly cover what we need to know. Okay? It's not going to give me the answer about what antibiotics I should take. But what it is going to say is, do you want a pattern of life? Do you want a way to live? And you talked today, Sue, about how God knows our design because he designed us. So he knows how you function, even with the arm like that, being cranky. Yep. And I did hear you cranky last week, actually. I thought, this is my credit. He knows how I think and operate. Which must do his head in. But anyway, it's good to think he's infinite and amazing. But I think the important thing is there's a pattern for me for us to live by, and it's biblical, and it just happens to be coming out in all of these health promotions. What are the things that work best for human beings for their mental health and well-being? I can almost guarantee you that when you're thankful, grateful, when you're focusing on the needs of someone else, when you enjoy life in moderation, which the Bible talks about very clearly, things like alcohol and so forth, when all those things are being followed, there is a good chance that your life is not going to be perfect, and you may still have a mental health condition, but for where you are in life, it'll be the best way to go. So for the poor person who's schizophrenic, if they can live with those principles, it's going to be a whole lot better than if they don't live by those principles. Does that make sense? Yeah? So it's not a medical textbook, but the principles within it are so important. Okay, now this is going to be probably the most obvious thing I've said today, but I'm going to say it anyway because, and I know this has affected people in the church, is you do need to seek help if it's at a certain extent. Like, prayer is important. Prayer is vital. Okay, but if you broke your leg and your shin bone was sticking out of your lower leg, I don't think you would just sit there and pray and pray, pray, and then a month later keep praying. You would seek help. And it's the same with mental health. Okay? If you need help, seek help. Whether that's a GP, a psychologist, or whoever it is, but seek help. Because if you're ill, you're ill. Okay? Now, I know it sounds really obvious, but I've known of Christians who have said, no, when it's mental, no, it's just all to do with the spiritual. Well, it's not. A lot of it is, but it's not. To do with the health of this grey thing in here. If you do have your Bibles, I just want to refer again to the reading that I closed off with last week. It's in Matthew 8, 14-17. Now, before I read from Matthew 8, 14-17, there are two other things that I haven't covered. One is, I don't think I mentioned this last week, what is a real positive is how much more willing Australians are to talk about mental health. That's a real positive. But can I especially say to the men, so men, not only do we have the whole issue of, you know, we're the caretaker, we're the leader, we're the one who should bear all responsibility for our family and so forth. We also happen to be Australian, and in Australia, generally the worldview has been that if you're an Aussie male, you keep things to yourself, and you'll be right, you'll be strong, and thankfully that's breaking down. Although, that still needs balance as well. But thankfully, that's breaking down. So men, in particular, you are not, I am not, invulnerable. You are not bulletproof. So men in particular, if you need help, seek it. Okay? Just wanted to say those in case I forgot them. Okay, Matthew 8, 14-17. And to me, this is one of the most hopeful passages that I can read because I know that the person I worship when he was here on this planet, was able to do things that are so amazing, and I still believe he can do them. When Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand and the fever left her. Has anyone ever had a fever that's so bad you start hallucinating? Because I'd never, ever had hallucinated in my life until I had a fever about three years ago. And I remember sitting in front of the fire and I was seeing things I should not be seeing. There was stuff happening in my head that I didn't think was possible. And so, you know how powerful a fever is? Like if a fever is really bad, you could be on death's door and hallucinating and you just feel like your body's just going to burn up. Thankfully, I've only had it once. Hopefully never again. But the fever left her. And this obviously didn't take hours or days because it says, and she got up and began to wait on him. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him. For I read on. Can I clarify something? Are demons real? Yes. Is there demon possession? Unfortunately, yes. Are some people affected by demons? Yes. Without a doubt. Okay? But they are not under every rock and chair in the world. And most of our sickness is not due to demonic activity. It's due to the fact that you and I are very complex fallen human beings on a fallen planet that has germs and viruses and bacteria. And when you fall, it means that you'll actually go from a higher place to a lower place. And if the ground happens to be hard and you hit it, you'll break something, won't you, Mrs. McCrennan? Like, it's just the laws of physics. Philip Yancey talks about that. You know, he talks about, well, God's made a world where there's flesh and blood and there's physical things. So if you are in a car and are driving too fast and you hit a tree, there will be carnage. Like, that's just physics. That's just life. Okay? You trip over a pot at night time, hit the deck. When you run with new running shoes, like I did yesterday, and don't put band-aids on, you get blisters. It's as simple as that. I mean, very low-key, but you get blisters. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed all the sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and carried our diseases, which is fabulous. As to whether he will heal you if you have a serious illness, well, that's up to him. That's why it's called a miracle. He's not an ATM. Now, providing you've got money in your account, when you go to an ATM, you operate it, you get money. Well, miracles just don't work that way. Miracles are miracles. Miracles are when God chooses to intervene into the normal physical operation of earth. That's what a miracle is. So you think about when Jesus stopped the waves, physical normality of earth was affected. Like they shouldn't have stopped. But they did stop. So a man who's blind, Jesus puts mud over his eyes, washes it away, and he can now see. That shouldn't happen. But it did happen. So that's a miracle. One other piece of very good news I can give you. The Bible clearly says that one day you and I will have a new body. And it's funny because whenever I say that at a church, yeah, you'll hear some people go, oh, thank goodness for that. And you'll hear some people go, really? You know, and some people are just nonplussed. They're just going, don't even know what you're talking about. But one day, we will have a new body. Now, I do not know what it will look like. I don't know what it will be made of. I just don't know. But what I do know is there will be no more mental illness. That will happen. A time will come when there will be no more mental illness. So for those of you who do struggle with mental health, well-being, illness, disease, whatever terms you want to use, there will come a time when you will be in a new body and you will not be struggling with that. I believe that because it says it in here. And one day it will happen. I'm just going to close in prayer. Living God, thank you for this day and thank you for each individual here. And no matter how complex, and even if I use the word weird, we are, thank you that you love us. And do pray that we will never, ever give up believing in your supernatural power to heal. Thank you for your promise that one day we will have new bodies. Please teach us that in all the things we can control, that we can make decisions about, that we will make wise decisions. Decisions that are good for our entire well-being. And we thank you for this coming week and that you are with us. In Jesus' name.